You know, we'd be walking up the main street out of drag, just being ourselves, boys and all that sort of stuff. And everybody and anybody were just calling out our names by our drag names. You know, Nova, Gina, and the, you know, Lacey.
Our birth
Gunner
names
man.
Are non-existent now. Lacey, that's Nova. The pair of sluts.
There they are, the Dreamtime Divas.
Yeah.
But they've claimed us, you know.
And they're proud of us.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Another U.S. appeals court advances job bias protections, Bermuda delays marriage inequality and messy legal loopholes, and Australia's Indigenous Dreamtime Divas entertain for equality. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 3rd, 2018. The Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled on February 26th that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which bans workplace bias based on a number of characteristics, including race and sex, extends to sexual orientation. The court ruled in 2000 and again in 2005 that sexual orientation was not covered under Title VII, but saying that legal doctrine evolves, Chief Judge Robert A. Katzman said in a media statement that we now conclude that sexual orientation discrimination is motivated, at least in part, by sex and is thus a subset of sex discrimination. That position has been supported by the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission since at least the days of the Obama administration, whose agencies also argued in favor of protections based not only on sexual orientation, but also gender identity. Saying that the EEOC was not speaking for the United States, a Justice Department spokesperson claimed that Title VII protects neither sexual orientation nor gender identity. Three members of the Manhattan-based court dissented from the 10-judge majority ruling. One argued that only Congress could create specific workplace bias protections for LGBT people.
The case involves the late Donald Zarda, a skydiving instructor for Long Island, New York's Altitude Express. He was fired in 2010 after trying to comfort a visibly anxious female customer by telling her, as he was strapping her into the skydive suit, not to worry about their close physical contact because he was 100% gay. Zarda died in a skydiving accident in 2014, but his friends and attorneys kept the appeal alive. Bill Moore, a co-executor of the late activist's estate, called the ruling a wonderful step forward for the country. I wish Don were here to see how he and his case have advanced the movement for LGBTQ equality. The decision only applies to the Second Circuit's jurisdiction, which covers the states of Connecticut, New York, and Vermont. All three states already outlaw workplace bias against LGBT people, but the appeals court decision is seen as significant because it's now the second such appeals court to rule for sexual orientation protections. A third federal appeals court has ruled to the contrary. Lower courts have also differed in their analyses, so the issue is almost certainly headed to the U.S. Supreme Court sooner or later for final resolution. Contrary to popular belief in the U.S., there are no federal laws specifically protecting LGBT people from any form of discrimination.
A married lesbian couple in Fort Worth, Texas, is suing Donald Trump's Department of Health and Human Services after a taxpayer-funded Roman Catholic adoptions agency refused to consider them to foster or adopt refugee children. They say that they were told that they were rejected because they did not mirror the Holy Family. Fatma Maruf and Bryn Esplin, both professors at Texas A&M University, told reporters that they were completely shocked by that explanation. Their lawsuit, filed by the queer advocacy group Lambda Legal, charges that the Health and Human Services Department is ultimately responsible for the obvious bias because the Conference of Catholic Bishops, which is also named in the suit, gets taxpayer money to operate their adoptions program through that federal agency. Maruf and Esplin have been married for almost 3 years. Maruf told the Texas Tribune that she and her wife believe that they are uniquely qualified to become foster parents of a refugee child. Maruf, a law professor, is the director of A&M's Immigrant Rights Clinic. Esplin is an assistant professor of bioethics. According to CNN, Catholic Charities had actually contacted Maruf to see if she'd speak about the work of her immigration rights clinic at one of their upcoming events. "They are happy to take our skills," Esplin said, "but our home wasn't good enough."
The lawsuit was filed less than a week after the Republican-dominated Georgia State Senate passed its Keep Faith in Adoption and Foster Care Act, which specifically allows taxpayer-funded adoption and foster agencies to refuse to place children with gay or lesbian couples. Its fate in the state house is unclear, but a backlash has already begun. Speaking at a rally against the measure in Atlanta late this week, actor Daniel Newman, who stars in the popular Walking Dead TV series, which is filmed in Georgia, called the bill a total embarrassment to the state. Alyssa Milano, featured in the Netflix comedy Insatiable, that's currently shooting in Atlanta, told the trade publication Variety that if the bill becomes law, "I think the film and entertainment industry will pack up and leave the state of Georgia." Leading TV showrunner Ben Wexler, whose producing credits include Arrested Development, seems to be leading the charge. He rallied his peers in a tweet this week that said, "If this dumb bill becomes law, let's be done filming television shows in Georgia." Georgia lawmakers passed another bill late this week that withdraws certain state tax breaks to Atlanta-based Delta Airlines to punish it for cutting ties to the National Rifle Association after the Parkland school massacre.
Finland's parliament has approved a bill to make a change to the Maternity Act and recognize both women in a same-gender partnership as mothers from the moment their child is born. It applies after one of the women undergoes fertility treatment to become pregnant. Current law requires the non-biological parent to go through the slow and often expensive process of adopting the child in order to gain full parental rights. The bill, approved on February 28th by a vote of 122-42, was inspired by a citizens' initiative to change the law. It's expected to take effect in about a year. It's only the second such initiative to be approved by Parliament. The first opened civil marriage to same-gender couples in 2014.
The queer legal eagle who slew Doma is now taking on the alderman of Starkville, Mississippi. City lawmakers last week voted 4-3 to deny a special event permit for the city's first ever LGBT Pride Parade. Starkville Pride organizer Bailey McDaniel has recruited famed attorney and Mississippi native Roberta Kaplan to file suit against the city. Kaplan is best known as the lead attorney in the U.S. Supreme Court case that overturned key parts of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, which had allowed the federal government to refuse to recognize the legal marriages of same-gender couples. That victory was a precursor to the High Court's ruling 2 years later that opened civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples across the country. Kaplan's motion for preliminary injunction of the Board of Aldermen's February 20th vote, filed in U.S. District Court on February 26th, calls for the application to be granted and for the city to provide in-kind services for a parade to be held on March 24th. A March 2nd story in the Starkville Daily News suggested that aldermen could be reconsidering their denial at a meeting in the coming week, so stay tuned.
Bermuda's government announced this week that, despite the specific ban on marriage equality for same-gender couples in the Domestic Partnership Act of 2017, same-gender couples will be allowed to legally marry on the North Atlantic island nation until May. According to the British Overseas Territories Royal Gazette newspaper, Home Affairs Minister Walton Brown said that the legislation passed in December would not take effect until June 1st to allow already planned weddings on the island and on Bermuda-registered ships to go forward. He said that the last day for lesbian and gay couples to get marriage licenses would be May 12th. In what may not be a coincidence, a legal challenge to the act is set to be heard in Bermuda's Supreme Court on May 21st and 22nd. It's being argued by former Attorney General Mark Pettingill, whose successful lawsuit at the same court in May 2017 led to that court's marriage equality ruling. With the Domestic Partnership Act of 2017, lawmakers made Bermuda the first nation on Earth to revoke marriage equality after it had already been declared legal.
And finally, veteran gay journalist Rex Walkner pointed out that Bermuda's Supreme Court is not the nation's highest court, but the government chose not to appeal its May 2017 marriage equality ruling. Pressured by the island's vocal evangelical leaders and their congregations, lawmakers reacted by passing the Domestic Partnership Act of 2017. Walkner also noted an odd wrinkle as things stand now. The original ruling that struck down the ban on marriage licenses for same-gender couples did only that. It did not extend specific marriage benefits to gay and lesbian couples. The Domestic Partnership Act of 2017, on the other hand, both re-banned marriage equality and extended all the benefits of marriage to newly created domestic partners. So if the ban is overturned in the Supreme Court, same-gender couples would continue to be able to marry, but their marriages still wouldn't have any benefits, other than two achieved in earlier battles, adoption and immigration. But a same-gender couple could enter into a domestic partnership and get all the benefits of marriage. It would be up to Parliament to fix the messy inequities.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending March 3rd, 2018. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm John Dyer V.
Extra! Extra, read all about it. Extra!
Have you checked our website lately? For now playing information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to thiswayout.org.
Priscilla Queen of the Desert made Sydney's infamous drag scene, well, famous. But a whole new generation is emerging in the ever-growing world of Indigenous drag queens in Australia. Dreamtime Divas is one of those rising acts. But this down-under duo is more than just glitz and glamour, as This Way Out's Barry McKay discovered when he caught up with them after a Mardi Gras performance.
Here I am with the Dreamtime Divas. We've just performed at Bumalli Aboriginal Art Gallery in Leichhardt in Sydney. Thank you very much to both of you. First of all, I'd like you to get you to introduce yourselves.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lacey Dunhamet. And
I'm Nova Jaina.
Beautiful. Can you tell me a little bit about Lacey Dunhamet? Because people overseas may not know what the reference there is.
I'm a bit of an ode to a local sister who's a bit of a singer-songwriter celebrity here back at home. And her name's Casey Donovan. And, you know, I just had a little bit of a cheek. She's my inspiration. And I've come up with Lacey Dunhamet, or two, or three, you know. Yeah.
So could you tell me a bit about your backgrounds? What was it like growing up gay and Indigenous?
Very difficult. Difficult in the sense of having expectations from, you know, particularly my mum, wanting more grandchildren, even though she had like 26, 27 of them, knowing very well that I was a gay boy back then when I came out to her when I was a 13, 14-year-old boy. Mm. You know, not being accepted by my peers as such, you know, being asked to play a game of football or do all the blokey, manly boy things. So, you know, I kind of dealt with that at a very late stage in life. Didn't really come to terms and comfortable with myself till I was about 35. I'm now a 42-year-old man, you know, drag queen. But yeah, I have coped with all the ups and downs of just the ignorance of people.
It was a little bit different for me. It wasn't only the Aboriginal side of it. It was also my family was very religious. That whole, you know, stereotypical thing that homosexuals are pedophiles and predators and all that kind of stuff. So that was really hard. That was serious. And burly brothers and things like that. So, you know, went through a lot. But come out the other side, fierce and fabulous.
What is the Dreamtime Divas story?
It really started as a bit of fun for a local gig that we were asked to do, and we were dabbling in drag, and they thought, oh, you know, let's frock up and have a bit of fun. It was for International Women's Week, so we put on a cabaret show, and it went crazy, you know. We sold out 300 tickets, and
where
just
was that?
That was in Kempsey at
just
our local RSL.
Small town.
Yes,
small country town, population of about maybe 26,000 people.
Yeah.
But like family and friends and, you know, wider community, just...
Yeah.
The whole community supported us.
And then everywhere we went after that, it was like, oh, that was fabulous. When's your next show? When's your next show? So it was kind of, okay, let's put on another show. You know, let's have fun. And it developed from there. We created the Dreamtime Divas. And you know, and then we started to get recognition and a little bit of a platform. And so we wanted to bring our past into it and try and create change and bring on some of the importance of, you know, youth suicide, teen, you know, depression and all that that comes along with homophobia, and especially in rural communities in Australia.
Particularly amongst LGBTQI kids, you know, who are finding it difficult to come to terms with themselves and
who,
you know,
they are.
In who they are and just the acceptance and all that, what, you know, we all need.
So I understand in your hometown of where you were living at the time, Kempsey, you were somewhat of local celebrities.
Yes. You know, we'd be walking up the main street out of drag, you know, just being ourselves, boys and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, everybody and anybody were just calling out our names by our drag names. You know, Nova, Gina, and the, you know,
our
Lassie
birth
Dunham
names
man.
Are non-existent now.
Lacey,
that's Nova. Ah, a pair of sluts, you know.
Yeah, there they are, the Dreamtime Divas.
Yeah.
But they've claimed us, they own us, you know.
And they're proud of us.
There's a sense of pride with that claim of ownership, and that's a great treatment.
And we want to take that and do something positive with it. We don't want to let them down either, because without them we wouldn't be here today. So.
That's exactly right. Absolutely. Yes.
Tell us about your fabulous costumes and makeup, and who inspires you both?
For me, my sister girl, Casey Donovan, inspires me. She's my inspiration for my character and my looks and things, you know. And my costumes, it's a bit of a buy something, can grab a needle and cotton and add some sequins and hoping it looks good. Yeah. We don't spend a lot of money. We can't, but whatever goes, and we team with the theme. Yeah.
Nova, I love your makeup above
your
eyes. Where did that come from?
My inspiration is divine, first and foremost, McQueen. And I think, you know, there's a bit of Grace Jones there as well, because she's considered quite eccentric. But then I have American queens with the likes of Nina Flowers. Yeah. She's fabulous. Yeah. But then there are also a few other Indigenous queens here in Australia, the likes of Destiny Has Arrived and Miscellaneous and JoJo's Ho and Crystal
Josie
Love,
Baker.
Josie Baker, you know, Shaniqua, you know, all my drag sisters.
What songs do you like to perform to?
All kinds of songs, from country to ballads, pop.
I'm a bit of a ballad queen. I give good mouth.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Whitney and Beyonce are quite my shtick, I'd like to think. You know, I feel their songs, and I feel as if I portray, you know, with emotion, the songs themselves.
I love big power ballads, you know, so like Jennifer Hudson and the big voices, you know, that kind of stuff. Christina Aguilera, her vocal ability, and to be able to match that with lip syncing, you know, that's where I'm at. Hi, I'm Lacey Dunhaman.
And I'm Nova Gina.
And we are the Dreamtime Divas.
And you're listening to
This Way Out.
This is Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia,
with the Dreamtime Divas.
You were doing support work with LGBT Indigenous youth in the Kempsey area. Can you tell us a bit about the Dreamtime Divas mission statement, if you like? Yeah.
More or less, we want to raise awareness for youth depression and teen suicide. You know, for homophobia to affect our young people so much that they're taking their own lives, that's something we've got to help with. You know, we have a platform, let's do something with it, and that's what we're about.
As well as raising the awareness of our LGBTQI kids, you know, committing suicide, you know, at such a rate that it's just ridiculous.
It's huge. The statistics in Australia are overwhelming.
Children who are going through mental health issues, you know, they just need to be recognised and hopefully addressed.
And our main audience, what we've found, and that's the difference between us and a lot of the other queens, is our main audience is mainstream community. You know, we don't have gay paths where we're from or gay clubs and things like that. So our audience is mainstream community, heterosexual, married couples, elders, everything. So without that direct message, it's more of being us, being fabulous, these people loving us and accepting us for us, and these younger generations seeing us be accepted and make them feel, oh, it's okay. You know, if they can frock up and go to that extreme, it's not so hard to just come out.
And Nova, you had an example in your own family of someone who took their own life.
About a year ago now, it was his anniversary, my 19-year-old nephew at the time, he'd committed suicide, and so his name was Baylon Hoskins, and his parents approached us, the Dreamtime Divas, and asking for this year's Mardi Gras, you know, 2018 Mardi Gras, if we could lead a Baylon's gift.
They've created a foundation in his honour, and they're rolling out programs across all our local schools, primary schools, and targeting these issues. Hey, you know, sexual diversity, gender diversity, and all that.
So they've tapped into Headspace and Beyond Blue, so they're quite renowned Australian, I don't know, probably international organisations where they're dealing with mental health issues and, you know, concerns that concern our kids, basically. But there are quite a few gifts around Australia. The parents of the children, they've created gifts as well, so there's quite a few that
together.
They're all collaborated. Yeah. And so, you know, with pride, we've been asked this year to lead Baylon's gifts, which is what we're all about. And, you know, if we can hopefully help get that message out, as Lacey mentioned, if it takes us getting dressed up in a frock, you know, 4.5 fucking hours to do it, then so be it, you know, because we have fun and we have quite a following here in Australia. We, you know, it's really quite an experience.
Nova, you took part in the recent Miss First Nations contest in Darwin. What is the contest and how did it go?
The Miss First Nations contest was our first ever all Indigenous drag queen competition. So there were six of us. It was quite similar to RuPaul's Drag Race, where we were asked to go through and do particular looks and photo shoots. You know, a couple of the queens got into cages with crocodiles, you know, with it's just this perspex and boxes in front of them, like, no, you're the crazy girls, you can have that, you can win that, all for it. But it was just all about showcasing our, you know, unique, I think, Indigenous drag queen personas, and just putting ourselves out there, because whether a lot of you guys know, if you walk into any particular gay bar in any Australian cities, there's not a great many representatives of Aboriginal Indigenous drag queens here in Australia. So, you know, hoping that this can...
It was a huge platform for all our sisters. You know, we started a few years ago and there was one sister that we knew, and now there's plenty, you know. And we're all in together and we have a huge sisterhood and we've got each other's back, and we're going for it.
Nova, you also appeared in the film Black Divas. Can you tell us a bit about that?
The Black Divas film is a production from Kalori Productions and Persky Productions as well. During the week leading up to the Miss First Nations competition in Darwin last year, back in September, I believe it was, they followed all of us contestants with our private lives. So, you know, it was us in our home
day
lives,
jobs.
Our day jobs, and all that sort of stuff. And so, all six of us were followed around.
And then home documented life, the whole.
And
the
then
whole
documented
Miss
the whole Miss First Nations for the week long that it was happening. And then probably a week after the, you know, sort of see how things, how we were feeling after it all.
And that's going to be shown in the States now, I hear.
It's creating a lot of momentum at the moment. I'm pretty sure it's been the number one film within the Sydney Queer Film Festival for the 40th anniversary of the Mardi Gras. We're doing our first red carpet next week.
Media slots.
You're such talented performers. How difficult is it to break into the mainstream drag performing scene in Australia?
I don't know how difficult it is with mainstream. It's not really something that's on our agenda.
Why aren't you performing on Oxford Street? Why aren't you performing in Melbourne?
Location's a big thing. We don't live in the city. I have performed on Oxford Street within the Drag Nation competition that they have every year, and that's national. But, yeah, I think it's more, you know, we're not that club city queen that's there to perform to be fabulous. We've got a message, we've got a passion, we've got a drive, so it's everywhere else we want to be.
Being here in Sydney now, you know, we've had, you know, our flights, return flights and accommodations and our fees and all that sort of and blah, blah, blah. But if we were to have travelled to where we live, back up in the country, we've just recently moved from Kempsey, a population of about 26,000, as I've mentioned before, to an even smaller community called Corakai in New South Wales, on the East Coast, which is like 700 or 800 people. I don't know, I never really took any
notice.
It's
events like this, you know, Corigra this week, leading into Mardi Gras, and that's when we do get our city gigs. You know, we're here tonight, and we're also performing at the famous Imperial Hotel in Erskineville on Mardi Gras
Parade night, where they shot Priscilla.
We're honoured to be performing there at such an iconic venue.
That's exciting.
It's great.
That's very exciting. Yeah.
And lastly, what is the future now for the Dreamtime Divas?
Well, I think with this Black Divas film and the
viral.
Well, yeah, but we're going to be poxed up, so we're going to need, you know, STD pills and tablets and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But this
penicillin
is
lump.
Well, you know, we'll take what we can. But we believe that this is going to go international with film festivals throughout the world, so I've been told.
And we wanted to open no doors for all those young queens and the next generation under us, Aboriginal queens who only ever see white queens on stage or in cinema or on theatre, you know.
Yeah.
The doors are open now, sisters. Go for it. Go hard or go home.
Nova and Lacey, thank you very much for your time today.
And thank you.
Thank you, Barry. Our pleasure, darling.
Call me.
With the Dreamtime Divas,
this is Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia, for This Way Out.
You can see Barry's Dreamtime Divas interview with some performance video clips at thiswayout.org. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Program material this week came from John Dyer V and Sarah Sweeney, with thanks to Steve Pride and from Barry Mackay. Whitney Houston performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 3ECB Croydon, Victoria, Experiment FM Ames, Iowa, KUOI Moscow, Idaho, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station, where our big birthday bash is coming soon, so stay tuned, y'all.